Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Randy Jones, and this is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. I have a jam-packed show to share with you all this afternoon, bifurcated up the middle with a division of theater in the first half and fiction in the second half. In the first half, we'll be joined by representatives of Studio 301. They have a brand new production of Spring Awakening by the German playwright Frank Wedekind. And we have the director and three of the actors who are appearing in this production. The show is going to be worth your while, I think, and we'll talk about some of those details. And then in the second half of the program, I'll be joined live here in the studio by John Lesqua. John Lesqua is the New York Times bestselling author of 21 novels, including a brand new one, Damage, that has been especially well reviewed. John Lesqua writes legal thrillers, most of them set in the city of San Francisco. He's a Davis-based writer, one of our most successful, and he'll be dropping by the KDBS studios to talk about his new novel, Damage. That, we'll have some announcements about some upcoming events, and I'll tell you how you can see me talking about technology and language on Channel 13 tonight, the 10 p.m. news. That and so much more here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. Enjoying some music by Ornette Coleman after we hear from the sponsor of this radio program, the Yolo Federal Credit Union. I'll be introducing you to a director and some actors. So stick around. This is KDBS and Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services, and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be joined by John the Squaw in the second half of the program. But right now, let's talk about Studio 301 and a new production that previews tonight and opens tomorrow called Spring Awakening by the German playwright Frank Wedekind. It's from Studio 301 Productions, and this is a play that inspired the famed musical of the same name. Mitchell Van Landingham, who's here in the studio, is the director of this moving drama about teenagers in the late 1800s. In Germany, they were struggling with their sexuality and trying hard to discover themselves within a sexually oppressive culture. I have four representatives of this show. I'll ask them to say hi, and then I'll give you a chance to find out more about them. First up is Mitchell Van Landingham. He's the director of this show. Hi, Mitchell. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Next, we've got Michael Lutheran, who plays the character Melchior.
Hi there.
Hello. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
And Ryan Garrity is here, and he plays Moritz. Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
And finally, Lizzie Tremaine, who plays Vendla.
Hi.
Hi, Lizzie. Well, let's start with our director, Mitchell Van Landingham. Mitchell, why don't you say something before we dive into the show about Studio 301. What is Studio 301? How is it different from a typical theater troupe?
Well, Studio 301 is an undergraduate-run theater troupe on campus that functions also as a social element to people who are involved in theater or otherwise interested in theater. It's, as I said, it's entirely undergraduate run, even though auditions for roles in shows are open to the community at large.
Mm-hmm.
They do three productions per year, which figures out to one a quarter, and this Spring Awakening is their winter production.
Excellent. This is a show that you're directing. Have you directed shows before?
Yes. For the Dead Art Society, which is another theater group on campus, I directed a play called Love Among the Bread Pudding with one of my friends and colleagues, Thomas Reeder. And back in high school, a century or so ago, I directed Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Weill's Threepenny Opera.
So you have some background in German theater then?
Yes.
Excellent. Great, great. So tell me, how was it that Spring Awakening was chosen? And comment, if you will, about its connections to any theatrical events of, say, the last quarter. Such as Tilly Nobody. That's what I'm leaning towards.
Indeed.
Yes.
Well, there was a production done by the UC Davis Department of Theater and Dance last October of 2010, called Tilly Nobody, Catastrophes of Love, which was a one-woman show performed by Professor Bella Merlin, who's a professor of acting. And that was about Tilly Wedekind, who is Frank Wedekind's wife, and all of their trials and travails. And it was interesting, quite personally for me, to see all of the parallels that she drew with the Wedekinds' lives and their works, which of course include Spring Awakening and the Lulu plays. And also, it was the fruit of some 20 years of research on behalf of Professor Merlin, which works wonderfully in that she's a premier Wedekind scholar right here on the Davis campus. So that's a wonderful resource for our purposes.
And also that many playgoers will already have some background understanding of Vedican.
Absolutely.
And perhaps their interest will be sparked to see this new production of Spring Awakening. Why don't you remind us of the dates, times, and locations of this production in case people wanted to find out more?
All right. Spring Awakening is taking place in the Wyatt Pavilion Theater. There is a preview performance tonight at 8 p.m., and it runs from the 10th to the 12th and the 13th through the 20th at 8 p.m. Blah, blah, blah. And the 13th through... Oh, God.
That's right.
Well, I knew I would mess this up somehow.
It runs this weekend and next weekend,
yes,
basically.
10th through the 12th at 8 p.m., 17th through the 19th at 8 p.m., and Sunday performances on the 13th and 20th at 2 p.m.
All right.
It's like running a marathon, isn't
there
it?
There you go. And is there an evening show on Sunday or just the...
Just the matinee.
Just the matinee on Sunday. All right. Now, if one wanted to find out more information or was interested in purchasing tickets, where would listeners get that information and where would they get those tickets?
They can email Studio 301 at studio301productions@gmail.com. Tickets are available at the door at Wyatt and at Freeborn Hall here on the Davis campus.
Excellent. And so what were some of the joys and challenges of directing this big show for Studio 301? And let me just remind folks, we're talking about Spring Awakening. And I have here in the studio three actors and the director, Mitch Van Landingham. And we're talking about a production that opens tonight here on the UC Davis campus. Go ahead.
Well, there's so much. If I can talk about first the kind of stumbling blocks. Mm-hmm. One of the big things to overcome in any production of Spring Awakening is, oddly enough, the language, because particularly Vedican style, but also just the style of late 19th century theater, doesn't fit quite well in the mouths of 21st century actors.
Right.
However, something that I am proud of is that we have managed to do Spring Awakening remarkably intact. You know, there's what you see on the stage is Vedican's work, very unadulterated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the joys of bringing Spring Awakening to the stage is the fact that this play was finished in composition in 1891, which makes this its 120th anniversary. And yet, it's still so incredibly relevant to the way we educate, or rather, we don't educate our children in this country in particular. You don't have to look very hard to find the parallels, particularly to what's going on right now with, say, abstinence-only sex education, how in this post-Columbine and post-Virginia Tech environment, high schools in particular, are becoming very circumspect, and they are becoming more like, well, prisons.
Mm-hmm.
Rates of teen suicide are going up so that they rival automobile accidents as a leading cause of death for people between the ages of 14 and 25, I believe it is. Child abuse is through the roof. Proposition 8 passed in California, which is just egregious, and it draws a great parallel to the anti-sodomy laws that were in effect in Germany around the time that this play was written, and this play covers all of them. So why update Vedican when he's already relevant for us?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we've been hearing from the director of a brand new production of German playwright Frank Vedican's Spring Awakening, the director here is Mitchell Van Landingham. The show opens in preview tonight and can be seen this coming weekend and next weekend at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater. We're going to take a quick musical break and hear a public service announcement. And when we return, we'll hear from some of the actors of this new production. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
Welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Michael Lutheran is here in the studio. He's an actor in the brand new production of Spring Awakening, which previews tonight and could be seen this weekend and next weekend at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater. Michael Lutheran's most recent performance was in the theater and dance department's production of Lucy Goff's radio drama Hinterland, voicing the roles of the anatomist and of Skullcoat/God. Past Studio 301 credits include playing the role of Macduff and Macbeth and Lysander in A Midsummer Night's Dream. He will be playing the part of Melchior in this brand new production of Spring Awakening. And Michael Lutheran, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. So who is Melchior in Frank Vedekind's Spring Awakening?
Well, Melchior Gabor is a 14-year-old young man who is top of the class, young student, highly intellectual. And he is exploring, you know, the relationships with others, his friend Moritz here, and their relationship and how Melchior knows about such things as masturbation and what sex is. Mm-hmm. However, Melchior struggles with the context of such things like that, and ultimately goes down a road that that is a domino effect throughout the course of the play.
So a central and important character, the first domino, if you will.
In many respects, alongside though with, you know, Moritz, Stiefel, as well as Venla Bergman, the three are intricately related, because there wouldn't be a Melchior without a Moritz. So they're best friends. And, it's just, he goes along this path and tries, and within this environment in which he doesn't know what the context of sex should be, he tries to enact it himself, and he goes through violence and a lot more tragedy.
What are you most excited about in terms of performing before an audience at the preview tonight at 8 o'clock?
Well, it's been great because we've had several members of our 301 board, as well as some friends sit in, such as the designers and stuff, who they've been sitting in through the process. However, to actually have to have people in the audience tonight will be great because Mitchell's vision of this show has been one of protest theater. And so we're here to make a point. And so it's good finally to have an audience in front of us to make that a point too is going to be great to have.
Wonderful. Well, and so you're playing Melchior in Spring Awakening. This has been Michael Lutheran. He was talking of Moritz. Let's hear from Ryan Garrity, who plays Moritz. And how would you say, Ryan, that your character differs from Michael's?
Well, it's sort of an interesting combination because, as Michael said, Melchior is top of the class in this very classically structured education of the late 19th century. And Moritz is an interesting parallel to that in that he has the same classical knowledge and he can allude to all of these things and literature and all that, but he still is at the bottom of his class. And it's a very interesting parallel again to the way the adults handle sexual education, because with Melchior, he knows all the facts, but he doesn't know the context, as Michael was saying. Moritz is completely ignorant of anything about that, and it sort of combined with his struggles in school and the oppressive and sort of, I hesitate to say uncaring, but fairly uncaring atmosphere of the society, it hits him hard when he can't come to terms with either, really.
I'm almost flashing back to all of those Charlie Brown cartoons I used to watch when I was a kid, where these youngsters have to make all these difficult decisions, and I often wondered, where are their parents? I'm wondering if this is a theme of the play itself. You all haven't talked about the parents is stepping in and providing guidance or love or suggestions or forbearance or admonitions or anything.
Well, that's a very interesting thing to bring up with Moritz and Melchior, because a big theme of the play is how the society, it is a cycle, and how the parents shape the children, who then become the next generation of parents, and it goes nowhere. And with Melchior's mother, Frau Gabor, is a, first of all, extremely feminist character for the time period, which is very interesting to look at. And she also has a uniquely free approach to Melchior's education. She encourages him to develop his intellect in every way he can. Whereas Moritz makes constant references and is constantly under this cloud of threat from his parents, who you actually don't see anything of until Act 3, of what they will do about his failure and how they will react to it. He's almost never thinking of himself when he talks about his struggles in school. He's only ever thinking about his parents' reaction and how they will be disappointed in him.
Right, right. Well, the play we're talking about is Spring Awakening. It's by Frank Wedekind, the German playwright of the 19th century. This play previews tonight at 8 o'clock at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater, and then it is in production this coming weekend, starting Thursday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night at 8 o'clock, and then a matinee at 2 o'clock on Sunday. And then it starts up again next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, the 17th, and then can be seen on the 18th, 19th, and 20th at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater. We're going to play one more public service announcement, and then we will hear from Lizzie Tremaine, who plays Vendla. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
If it were easy, everyone would do it. It takes a special person to join the National MS Society's Bike Tours to Fight MS. If you like a challenge and want to have some fun for a good cause, call 1-800-FIGHT-MS.
And we're back. This is KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. And Lizzie Tremaine is here. She's happy to be back with Studio 301 Productions after last spring's hit production of Hair, the hippie love rock musical. She's recently been seen in UC Davis's Department of Theater and Dance's production of Hinterland as the anatomist's assistant. And all three of these actors, as well as their director, are also undergraduates here at the University of California at Davis. Lizzie Tremaine, welcome to the radio show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So who is Vendla?
Well, Vendla is the primary female character. This is a very male-oriented show, but there are a couple female characters in it. And she is a very curious, very, for females at the time, very intellectual character. But through her explorations and trying to find herself and her sexuality, even though she doesn't know what sex is, she is kind of thwarted by this very oppressive, protective society. And that's really seen through her mother, Frau Bergman, who doesn't share very much information with her daughter, even when her daughter directly asks her to tell her about where babies come from. She skirts around the question, and the repercussions are severe.
I bet.
Yes.
Would you characterize this play as a tragedy? Or is that putting it too strongly?
Yes, I would. Okay. I would. It's actually entitled The Tragedy of Childhood in Three Acts. Has a little subtitle under it. It's a very perverse and at times very hilarious tragedy, but yes, it's a tragedy, I would say.
And do you ever find yourself retroactively shocked for 19th century German society upon which this play was first presented? Are there things shocking in it today that you're sure were even more shocking 120 years ago?
It's very shocking today. Audience members should be prepared to be shocked. And it's absolutely incredible that Frank Wedekind put this on paper over 100 years ago. And we have talked as a cast about how it wasn't uncensored or produced uncensored until the 1970s. And then it was still a surprise. So a lot of issues have transcended time, really, and they're still quite relevant today.
People are preparing to buy tickets, I'm sure, in which case they can go to the box office here at Freeborn Hall on the UC Davis campus. Would you characterize this as PG-13, as R, as NC-17?
I would say
not a kid show.
It's not a kid show. Probably PG-13, potentially R. R. Okay, Mitchell is saying R.
Well, there you go. So, and that's good for people to know.
Yes.
Both to look forward to and then to decide who to bring with them.
Yes.
Absolutely. Great. Well, I'm really interested in this production of Spring Awakening. And I'll remind folks that the show starts tonight in preview, starts tomorrow for real, and then can be seen Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night at 8 o'clock, 2 o'clock on Sunday, and then it starts all over again next weekend on the 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th of February. Remind me one more time of the email address where they can contact you all to find out more.
That would be studio301productions@gmail.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks to all four of you for coming on the radio show and telling us about Spring Awakening by Frank Wedekind. I look forward to seeing what you all have done with this important play.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen, because after Ornette Coleman, I believe I'll have the opportunity to introduce you to John LaSquaw here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. ¶¶
As financial situation becomes increasingly desperate, Freeform Radio struggles to survive. KUSF 90.3 FM, one of our sister stations from the San Francisco area, has abruptly been discontinued. If you would like more information, search for Statement on the Shutdown and Sale of KUSF FM or visit artsandmedia.net, or you could contact Christine McClintock at 415-738-4975.
I just received a message from Monica Storrs, who's been a guest on this radio show a number of times, a dramatic and flamboyant and especially talented poet, that she will be giving a reading, I believe in 126 Voorhees, tomorrow evening. What is that? The 10th of February. And she has invited me, and I'm going to pass along that invitation to all of you. That's at 126 Voorhees, the San Francisco-based poet Monica Storrs. And now, here is, again, a message from the sponsor of this radio show, the YOLO Federal Credit Union.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. John LaSquaz is here in the studio with me. John LaSquaz is the New York Times bestselling author of, and I've written here, 21 novels. My intern and I were discussing whether it's 21 or 20.
I think it's 22.
It's 22.
And I might know. I mean, I could be wrong, too, but I'm thinking 22.
She had originally written 19, and I said, oh, I know that's not right. So 22.
Let's I'm writing number 23 now.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Excuse me. John LaSquaz, the New York Times bestselling author of 22 novels, including his most recent, Damage. Betrayal was his 14th book in the San Francisco-based, is that Dismas?
Dismas.
Dismas.
Yeah.
Dismas Hardy Abe Glitzky series. And he has a great number of other books which show his appreciation for Sherlock Holmes. His first novel, Sunburn, won the San Francisco Foundation's Joseph Henry Jackson Award for the best novel by a California author. And Dead Irish and the 13th Juror were nominees for the Seamus and Anthony Best Mystery Novel Prize, respectively. Guilt was a Reader's Digest Selection Edition choice, and The Suspect, chosen by the American Authors Association of its for its 2007 Novel of the Year. It was also the 2007 One Book Sacramento choice of the Sacramento Library Foundation. We're here mostly to talk about his brand new book, Damage, which last time I checked was at about number 14, number 15 on the bestseller list, which is a great place to be.
It's not bad.
And as well as some of John LaSquaz's other projects. Welcome back to KDVS.
Great to be back.
Good to have you here. So let's talk a little bit about Damage so that people's interest is piqued. They may want to visit the Avid Reader or some other local independent bookstore. There are a lot of places to buy books. And then I want to return to it at the end, but also talk about some of your other projects. Damage has been really well reviewed from what I've seen.
It's been it's kind of been embarrassing, frankly. It's been the best reviewed book I think I've ever had. Some guy, Huffington Post, said that my writing was a national treasure.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, that's nice, and everybody else seems to have liked it a lot. So it's heartening to hear and see that people are reading it and liking it.
That's wonderful. Now, I'm wondering if you're wondering if now, at number 22, I'm writing my best reviewed book, what are the lessons that I've learned? What is it that gels or really works well with Damage?
Well, you know, I really think I spent a little bit of time on this story. Most of the time I when I'm writing, I have to hand in an outline before I do the book, and that outline is due in September. And I hand in a book in June, and I've been doing this for about 20 books in a row. But in this case, with Damage, I really decided I was going to, number one, write not a Dismas Hardy book, not a Wyatt Hunt book, who's my other kind of series character. I wanted to write a book that the story itself was a lot more hard-hitting and dealt with some of my characters who were not always the leads in my other books. And I wanted to give them a little opportunity to grow and stretch out and be challenged.
I saw that in some of the reviews that people are saying that these characters that are important but supporting players in previous books
right.
Are given center stage. We're able to see some of the difficult choices that they make.
Yeah.
And it takes place, of course, again in San Francisco. You bring in both not only the judicial system, which is a part of most of your books, but also the media and the extent to which media, in this instance, newspapers, can be trusted and can be fair.
Well, we're living in an age of absolute non-objectivity in the news, and everybody knows it. I mean, if you listen to MSNBC, you get one side. If you listen to Fox News, you get the other side.
Right.
And there's no middle. Everything is spin. And I just thought, you know, I mean, one of the things I try to do, I don't try to teach lessons so much in my books, is to illustrate or to dramatize issues that are going on in the world around us. And this was a big one that I wanted to take on because it kind of makes me mad in real life. That we don't have any kind of civil discourse, and we don't even have knowledge, really, of the facts of most situations.
You also have a character on the loose whose family has posted bail, and there's some mystery about, whether as I'm almost like hearkening back to another San Francisco crime procedural, like Dirty Harry, where there's a bad guy loose in San Francisco, and what's he going to do
next?
Well,
that's a pretty compelling storyline. I mean, from Dirty Harry onwards.
Yeah.
And this storyline was made more compelling by the fact that it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, of course, has that cool judicial aspect, as you pointed out, where the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal is a very liberal court, and it's, in fact, the most overturned appeal court in the United States by the Supreme Court. In this case, a real guy in 1998 raped and killed a woman, and he was released remanded back for trial because the victim's family during the trial had worn a badge with her picture on it. And the Ninth Circuit ruled that prejudiced the jury unfairly against the defendant, who was no doubt guilty as sin. And what happened in real life is the Supreme Court sent that back and sent him back to prison and said, no, we're not going to accept that appeal. However, I thought that might be a good jumping off point for my fictional story to let another lunatic out on the street and then also have a novice district attorney who's trying to please his constituents at the same time as he's trying to do his job and at the same time as he's always been a defense attorney in the past.
Right.
And so he's got a whole bunch on his plate that he finds himself unable to cope with.
So it's almost going back to what you were saying about MSNBC versus Fox News. He has internal battles going on.
Yeah.
Political fairness, justice, etc.
It's great. It's great to dramatize all this stuff. I mean, you pile enough stuff on somebody, and they're either going to break or they're going to rise to it. And I like to think Wes rose to it, but it wasn't easy for him.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, the book we're talking about is Damage, and it is John Lesquois' 22nd novel. And it's available everywhere. So you may want to check out a copy.
It is available everywhere. It's nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of your the other work that you do in town. Do you write your novels right here in Davis?
Yes.
Do you find yourself having to return to San Francisco for information gathering trips? And when you do that, do you stay there for a while? Are they day trips, or you just remember? Or how does that work?
Well, you know, I've lived in San Francisco four different times. Mm-hmm. It's always been the weather that's driven me out. And we finally settled here in Davis, I think, something like 19 years ago, maybe further than that. 1993, 17 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, I've loved it here. I've had three or four different offices. And they've all been right downtown within a few blocks of one another. They've all been wonderful to work in because the environment is just so good here. I go down to San Francisco. Occasionally we have a pied-à-terre down there on Russian Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very fortunate we get to go down and hang out. But really what I do when I'm researching and trying to get a story flowing or moving in a different direction is I generally go to Sam's Grill, which is an old, great restaurant on Belden Alley and Bush Street in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I meet a couple of my consultants there, lawyers and cops and other people, mostly my friend Al Giannini, who's my best friend since high school, who's a homicide district attorney in Redwood City. So we get together at Sam's. We drink too much. You know, people say things they probably wish they hadn't have said, but they tell me secrets.
Right.
And they give me a great deal of insight and insider information on kind of the current tone of things in the city. And it's always surprising to me because it is so different than Davis.
Yeah.
And it's so different from small town USA. It's big city USA in spite of being small enough to get your hands around. So it's a perfect combination of, you know, close enough and yet far enough away that I can feel like I can be objective. I can enjoy myself down there without feeling like, you know, anybody's watching me what I do.
Right.
And it's really it's a perfect situation.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of your own writing life, it's important for you, it sounds like, to get out of the house and,
yeah.
and go to probably a not very large office where you're sitting down with a – do you have a laptop and a view from a window, or how does that work?
Well, it's funny. You should say not very large. Actually, my office now, as of last summer, is a whole house.
Really?
Yeah.
Great.
It's really weird, but it happened. My first office when we when I was on C Street was a closet.
Uh-huh.
It was a literal closet with no outside window. And it was probably 6 feet by 8 feet.
Did you have enough air in there?
There was plenty of air.
Okay.
But it was, I kept the door open out to the hallway to add to the air situation. There was no view at all and no sound. And I wrote, I think, four books there, maybe five. And then I moved to a different house on D Street. And that was, I had a beautiful upstairs office that was really nice. And then we had bought a house downtown here as a rental a few years ago, and our renter, who was wonderful, left, and we were stuck kind of looking for a renter. And my accountant said to me, you know, your corporation can rent this. And I said, yeah. So now I have this, you know, really kind of special big place. My friend Max Bird is another author in
yeah.
town. He walked in the first time he saw it. He opens the door, and he goes, well, you're Michael Crichton. I don't think I'm Michael Crichton, but, you know, the business has been good to me. So.
Well, it seems to me, I'm trying to think of what I try to avoid at home in order to get work done.
Uh-huh.
And it might be my beloved children. Mm-hmm. It might be, I don't know, the television set, certain books that are not helping me focus, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you've got a whole house, won't you sooner or later fill it with the sort of things that you might wish to avoid?
Well, you said the magic word, and that
yeah.
was children.
Okay.
You know, my children now.
Yeah.
My children now are out of the house.
Right.
And so that's not an issue in either place, my office or my home. I don't have a TV in my office.
Right.
I don't have really anything musical in my office. I have one, you know, kind of like boombox that I have tucked away in a drawer, but I never use it. I really have to have silence, and I don't really go for the view big time because I'm living the view that I'm having is kind of internal.
Right.
It's in my head, and I don't want to get confused by somebody jogging along out front. So I don't really pay much attention to anything. I'm really pretty serious in terms of when I'm writing. I'm in a zone, and I really don't do anything else.
So in a lot of ways, it's like a much bigger closet.
That's right.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, I could be writing in the middle of Toomey Field.
Yeah.
And it would be a bigger closet. I mean, that's a really good analogy, actually.
All right.
So.
Well, you can use that. I'll look for that in one of your future books. All right. John Lesqua is my guest. We're talking about a number of topics, including his brand new book, Damage, which is on the New York Times bestseller list. We're going to take a quick musical break. I have a public service announcement to share. And we'll be right back with more of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. This is Dr. Andy with an important message. The law offices of Timmons, Owen, and Owen are proud to join the 2011 blood drive, and they remind us that the need for a safe and secure blood supply is always with us. If healthy and qualified, do your part and donate blood. You protect not only yourself and your family, but the community as well. Remember, the greatest gift you can give is the gift of life. This important message is a courtesy of the law offices of Timmons, Owen, and Owen in Sacramento, and they're concerned for the welfare of our community. Welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. John Lesqua is here. He's the author of a brand new book, Damage. It is his 22nd novel. He's working on number 23 now. He's won all sorts of prizes and accolades, and this new novel, Damage, is particularly well-received. And I've found it. We'll just throw in a little bit of technology, John. I've found it highlighted on my iPad. One of the many news applications I have is the 10 best list of Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah.
10 things that they want you to check out. And 1 week you were one of those things.
I was number 8 on the must list.
On the must list. That's what it's called.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I know. It's it was pretty amazing to get that. So they liked Betrayal as well a couple of years ago and put it on it. So it's always nice to get there. But, you know, you write these books and you try to make them really good.
Right.
You know, you don't want to just put out some schlock. And if you find a good story and you've got good characters and you know, the gods smile on you, you can put out some good stuff. And I kind of want to be in on the must list.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's weird to have those kind of expectations where – but you know, at 22 books down the road, you know, you gotta feel like you're part of the mainstream.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a good indication. So there's the mainstream, but then there's also the international flavor of some of the work that you do, because I read somewhere that your books have been translated into, is it 17 languages?
I think it's more like 20 now, but it's a lot, yeah.
It's a lot. And so I'm wondering, where are you particularly and perhaps unexpectedly big?
Well, it's weird. I'm big in Germany.
Yeah.
Although I often say my books are big in Germany because they actually all look like Bibles.
Uh-huh.
When they translate them, you know, the words in German are so much bigger
right.
that my 400-page book in America is really a 650, 700-page book in Germany.
Yeah.
So I'm big in Germany. I'm big in the Benelux countries, all of them. Ironically enough, I mean, in Dutch, the Dutch people just love me.
Yeah.
And then... you know, for some reason that I just can't even imagine, China has evidently kind of gotten on the ball in the last two or three books.
That's fun.
And it's like, wow, what? I mean, I don't know what the Chinese are going to do with the American legal system. Maybe that's what the fascination is.
Yeah.
But those are the pretty big ones, you know. And ironically, there are a couple of places, this just blows my mind. England, for example, I have not even been published in England for the last five books.
Interesting.
They just dropped me. And I'm going... wait a minute, I don't really quite get this. And nobody seems to know why, except that that's what's happened.
Well, George Bernard Shaw had that line about the Americans and the British. How did it go? They share a common language, but they're divided by a common language.
That's it.
And so,
good pub quiz question.
Either that, or you've got some great translators because you're doing so well in all these other countries.
Well, you know, the other thing that's really ironic, talking about this exact thing, is something that I just don't understand at all because I've never even heard it. But all of my books are on audio, and I could live off of my audiobooks alone. I mean, if I didn't even publish in hardcover or say paperback.
Right.
I mean, the Brilliance Audio is the people who put out my books. They've now just gone back and rebought right all of them way back all the way to Sunburn. So they are obviously doing very well with them, and they're just selling like crazy.
That's great.
It's great.
Well, increasingly, and perhaps tragically, Americans spend a lot more time in their cars than they used to.
Well, they do, and there's a lot of, you know, the very first signing event I ever had as an author, and it was just completely out of the blue, but I went to a thing called the NATSO Convention in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And the NATSO Convention stands for the National Association of Truck Stop Operators.
Oh, really?
And they had my book, Guilt, on audio, and that's what they were promoting, and that was the very first kind of like public event I ever did, and I went, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
It is, and now the weirdness has overtaken all of your books, and people are listening to them around the country and around the world. Well, we've just got a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask you, you've been very successful, as we've been talking about, but you've also been thinking about UC Davis, this university here in your hometown, and ways that you've been promoting literacy and creative writing and great writing of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about those. Because students here at UC Davis, they benefit from all of your successes in ways that they may not always realize.
Well, you know, I'm very fortunate because I got my start from winning this award, this Joseph Henry Jackson Award. So the first thing I did at Davis, I was a trustee of the UC Davis for several years and got involved with both the creative writing department, the English department, and then also the University Writing Project.
Right.
And with the writing program, I decided that I would found an award named after my father, the Maurice Award, to recognize long-form fiction. So every year, one of the graduates of the UC Davis Creative Writing Department, under Pam Houston, wins this award, and it's a $5,000 prize.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, worthwhile, I think, for somebody who's just starting out. Four out of the five winners so far have been published. Melanie Thorne, I think last year's winner, she just got published like yesterday.
That's wonderful.
Great. And she's getting published by my publisher. But on top of that, I'm not just a creative writing person. I believe in literacy in general. And so I've got involved a little bit with Chris Tice and his university writing project and the prized writing particularly, where I try to help out with that in terms of giving a little bit of an honorarium for the winners and that kind of thing. And then also I just kind of like to once in a while throw parties.
Absolutely.
You know, we have dinners for these things, and it's not a big deal, but it gives a sense of event and makes you feel like writing and reading is important. And sometimes in our normal daily world, especially kids on campus, I know, you know, it's not like reading is the big thing. And it can be not only important but fun, and it can be lucrative, and it's great.
And many students, as you just suggested, might not realize that, might not think of themselves that way until their work is recognized, and recognized with a check. It's such a big deal.
It is a big deal. I mean, this prize writing thing, everybody should know about it more than they do.
Yeah.
It's just a brilliant, multi-genre-fied. It's like it's got scientific writing. It's got literary writing. It's got all kinds of stuff. All you guys out there and women listening out there, you know, get to know the prized writing program, because it takes the best essays of the whole UC Davis for the year and edits them professionally and releases them in a book. And it counts as publication, believe me. It's a big deal. And it's not specific to fiction or nonfiction or anything like that. You can really just do whatever you want.
And the book is used as a textbook here at UC Davis.
Yes, it is. And I think it's used as a textbook in several other colleges, actually.
Yeah.
So it's great.
If you want to find out more about that, you can visit the website for the University Writing Program. And I usually type in writing.ucdavis.edu, and it will bring you right there. Well, John Lesquois, we've just begun to touch on topics, and here we are at the end of our hour. I hope I can... We should come up with an excuse to bring you back for a full hour and have another conversation about some of these topics.
I would be delighted.
And I hope that you have continued good fortune with your brand new novel, Damage. It's now on the New York Times bestseller list, and as we've been saying, it's available in bookstores everywhere. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy. I very much appreciate all of my guests joining me this afternoon. In addition to John Lesquois, we were joined by the director and three of the actors from a brand new production of Spring Awakening. It's the Frank Wedekind play, and it opens tonight at the Wyatt Pavilion Theater in preview performances, and then can be seen Thursday, Friday, Saturday of this weekend and the coming weekend. The weekend after at 8 p.m. with Sunday matinees at 2 o'clock. If you want to find out more about this program, you can visit poetrytechnology.com. Otherwise, stick around for some great music. And I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry